Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. Also wanted to give out a little bit of a heads up to those of you in the Auckland area, particularly West Auckland is where the new transmitter for Rush FM has gone up. So for the first time ever, you can listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on the airwaves in Auckland, 88.0 FM, I believe. And I think the Vinnie Eastwood Show plays around 6 o'clock, about the same time as the news. I don't know, but I'll have to check out. But check out rushfm.co.nz for the details. Yeah, yeah! Finally got a broadcaster in Auckland. I've been broadcasting from Auckland for like 4.5 years or something like that in one form or another. And I always joked with people, you know, like they ask me when I tell them I'm a radio show host, you know, what frequency is it? What frequency is it? And I say, well, you can't get it in Auckland because people are just too cowardly to play this kind of controversial content. you know, who knows? I might have been right because I actually had to wait for somebody from Hamilton to set up a transmitter here before we could get it played in Auckland. So that's pretty funny, isn't it? Speaking of Auckland and its relationship with Hamilton, I went down to Hamilton on Sunday to hear a couple of dentists speak about fluoride. And unlike a lot of dentists who speak about fluoride, they were actually telling the truth and trying to get out real information about this particular issue. And there was one heckler who arrived. Ken. Whatever his surname is, I don't think it matters. Who was this kind of, according to the people at the Fluoride Action Network that I've been speaking to, is some form of douchebag. I mean, I cannot confirm this, but we've got one of his articles here that he wrote, a blog, sorry, articles. Wait a second, what's the difference between a blog and an article now? Is an article, like, got some kind of officialdom before it, and a blog is just some dude rambling? Maybe it's a little bit of column, a little bit of column B. Okay, so let's do this. And I find the irony here is that the website that he's posting on is called Open Parachute. you know, like that old saying, the mind is like a parachute. It works best if it's open. So naturally, he's a pro fluoridationist, and anybody who introduces any information that's against fluoride is dumb and crazy and believes in mermaids. Yeah. It's about right, isn't it? So it makes a hell of a lot of sense for somebody to have an open mind like that and not look at any evidence and be a propagandist, a scumbag, probably working for the government. And in fact, somebody sent me an article this morning about this that allegedly, there are actually people who are paid by the fracking government to discredit people who talk about this kind of stuff on the web, you know, to troll them and so on and so forth. Now, let's get away with this article in the first place anyway. Okay, NZ experts. I love it how they use the word experts as if I'm an expert because I don't look at evidence or review my own decisions. I'm an expert because I purposely parrot the propaganda that I've been told to and never once think for myself or ask a single reasonable fracking question. I'm an expert. I'm a fracking expert. New Zealand experts deplore anti-fluoridation misrepresentation of science. Now, there's an old tactic from way back in the day, where if you're being a scumbag, the best thing to do is to accuse your enemies of being scumbags. If you're a Nazi, you accuse your opponents of being Nazis. If you're a pseudo-scientific, propagandistic misrepresentative of science that has an agenda and happens to be quite insane, you accuse the people who are against you as being misrepresentatives of science that are quite insane. It's a brilliant tactic. If you're five. Okay. Let me see if I can calm down here. All right, I'm going to start reading this because I'm just, I don't know how other people feel about this. But people who are pro-fluoride are often simpletons. And mean-spirited people. Often self-righteous, full of themselves. Basically just not nice people. Not intelligent people. Not friendly people. Not people that can think. They're just basically well, more or less. You know how fluoride's a toxic waste? Okay. Well, think about the people that support it. They're the toxic waste of humanity. All right? If you support fluoride, you are a human representation of toxic waste. I think I just summed that up quite clearly there, didn't I? I mean, think about it. They cause stress. They cause cancer. They don't do anything good for your teeth. These people are toxic waste. I almost can't even be bothered starting to read this article because it's probably just so full of propaganda. I haven't even read it yet. Just got sent this by the Fluoride Action Network like yesterday. He gets his stuff up real quickly, doesn't he? I usually abhor the concept of science by petition. Science by petition? What is science by petition? Is that kind of like the Diagnostic Statistical Manual where they don't actually come up with any scientific evidence to back up any of the mental disorders that they claim everybody's got and they just vote on it? Is that science by petition? What is that? But I have had a guts full of devoted anti. Just remember, everything that I'm saying now is the direct opposite of the truth. That's how these people operate. Okay, imagine if fluoridation was saying this and just change around the words so that it becomes the opposite. Just imagine this while I'm reading it. But I have had a guts full of devoted anti-fluoridationists assuring me that they have scientific and other experts on their side. Let me just strike that and reverse it. I've had a guts full of devoted fluoridationists assuring me that they have scientific and other experts on their side. See, it makes sense all of a sudden, doesn't it? And the last straw was the attempt by a local supporter of Fluoride Free Hamilton to get the Waikato University Chemistry Department staff to voluntarily stop discussion. See, that's a spelling mistake here, Ken. You know, you got to get your Shiite Muslim together, bro. To voluntarily stop discussing the science of fluoridation. He wanted scientists to opt out of discussing science. Really? Got any evidence of that, bro? That the fluoridationists are actually the ones who are the ones that don't frickin' want any science being discussed because they don't actually know what science is about a hypothesis that you try to disprove so that you make sure that there's actually something valid about what it is that you're claiming or thinking or stating? Oh, wait.
No, you don't, do you? You freaking douchebag.
See, and here's the problem with these fluoridationists. It's not just the fact that they're wrong and they tell you the exact opposite of the truth, is that they also just make stuff completely up. Well, like, okay, what freaking universe do you live in? Where you're an anti-fluoride protester or activist or frickin' community person or whatever, who has reviewed the science ad nauseum, had a look at all of the experts who once promoted fluoridation, all recusing themselves, all turning back and just going, oh my God, I was lied to, and now I feel responsible for having lied to absolutely every frickin' body. And I'm real sorry about that. Okay, so that's what the science has actually proven, is that fluoride is freaking dangerous. It causes cancer faster than any other known chemical. This is according to a guy who worked for the Cancer Research Institute for 34 years. This is professional PhD-backed opinion. Okay? This is not a joke. Except for the people who are who love fluoride so much, because hey, look, toxic chemicals are really bad, right? Except if there's only a little of them, then they suddenly magically become transmuted into a good chemical. Yeah, just a little bit of cyanide, little bit of sulfuric acid. Oh, mate, that's the ticket. That's the cherry on frickin' top. So it was nice to see medical, scientific, and technical people respond a little to this. The last issue of Hamilton's free paper Hamilton News included a list of New Zealand experts who disagree with the anti-fluoridationist claims. The list was whipped up in short time and is not restricted to local people. The statement reads, quote, "The following medical, scientific, and technical experts deplore the misrepresentation of science to support the beliefs of the anti-fluoridation lobby. The true science of water fluoridation has, quote, shown that drinking water fluoridation it reduces the incidence of tooth decay, not shown that drinking water fluoridation has any ill effects on general health." And this is just a complete lie. And naturally, they've got a big, big bunch of Waikato District Health Board people, doctors ad nauseum, all signed on to this. Okay, so who's paying you? Who's paying your salary there? Oh, the Waikato District Health Board. Okay, and does the Waikato District Health Board have a stance on fluoridation? Yes, they do. And what is that stance? Well, they support it. Okay, and do they have any science to support that stance that they support? No. Oh, but they keep repeating that they do. And without showing any of the frickin' evidence, and only actually showing a group of people who are doctors who can't frickin' think for themselves, who get paid by this organization to say this, otherwise they get probably fired. I mean, come on. See, here's my problem. I can think. If I wasn't able to think, this stuff would look really, really reasonable to me. Oh my God, a whole bunch of scientists say this particular thing. and I wouldn't question. Hold on. They support all this thing. Where's the evidence? You're just repeating a statement over and over again. I haven't seen one scientific paper referenced. I haven't seen one case study referenced. I have seen no references of any kind ever. And I would also look at the fact that this big list of people says at the very top of it, advertorial, which means it's not a scientific-based freaking conclusion, which means that somebody's paying for this advertisement to be put in there. So hold on a second, hold on a second. You got, what, umpteen numbers of doctors signing on to an advertisement, therefore fluoride is good for you. Did anybody else think that maybe those people who advertise stuff to you aren't all the time telling the 100% truth? That they're actually more likely to be full of crap otherwise? You know, that kind of thing? Especially if they're being paid for it? Especially if they don't toe the mother-fracking party line on fluoride, they might actually get fired and get out of their cushy district health board jobs? Did anybody else think about that? Am I alone in this or something? Come on. I just really don't like these people. Now, here's an interesting thing. There was quite, and I mean quite, a lot of information that was given out during that fluoridation meeting on Sunday. Guess how much of that information made it into Ken's little blog? That's right. Get none. So this is how the fluoridationists work. Okay. We give you 2 hours of content, 2 hours of graphs, 2 hours of scientific reference notes and studies, the opportunity to write in questions and get answers from the panelists, and how many sentences can you squeeze into a minute? You know, I don't know. Like let's say there's a page or whatever. So there's 120 pages, give or take, of information that was released to you during this particular meeting. And none of it comes into your little blog, does it, Ken? You know why? Because you're a pathetic, unthinking, unwavering, staunch supporter of established, indoctrinated, dogmatic thinking processes. Which means there aren't actually any thinking processes going on, Ken! Just shush! Put up or shut up. Come and have a debate, bro. We'll see you again.
Speed Wayne rappers, but I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible, respectable, and professional. Do you read me? Am I legible? It's time to get down to the question of eventually will the corruption in the government leave.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Now, this is a bit of an old article here, but I think it kind of illustrates what we're talking about, is that the government hires shills and propagandists and trolls and so on and so forth to come and try and discredit you on your websites. It happens all the time. And this one's out of the Washington Post. Obama pick for NSA review panel wanted paid. Wait. Wanted paid pro-government shills in chat rooms. Yeah, sorry about that. Cass Sunstein. Anybody ever heard of that dude? He's a guy who was the White House science czar for a time, who called for, quote, cognitive infiltration of 9/11 truth groups. All right? So it's the secret police. It's the Stasi, you know, calling for that kind of stuff. These people are freaking nuts. They're scary, scary, scary people. All right, just think about this. Somebody who's in a position to protect your freedoms is there, in fact, to ensure that you never get any of your freedoms upheld. and to destroy any remaining freedoms that you have. It's that simple. That's every single representative that you're thinking of. You know, maybe possibly a few exceptions, but I doubt it. The Obama administration is reportedly proposing Cass Sunstein as a member of a panel to review the surveillance practices of the National Security Agency, the NSA, among other former White House and intelligence staffers. Sunstein was the head of the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs until last year when he returned to teaching at Harvard Law School, where, incidentally, David Cunliffe, the new Labour leader, was educated. As one of our intrepid commentators pointed out yesterday, while at Harvard in 2008, Sunstein co-authored a working paper that suggests government agents or their allies, quote, cognitively infiltrate conspiracy theorist groups by joining chat rooms, online social networks, or even real space groups, and influencing the conversation. Sunstein's paper defined a conspiracy theory as, quote, an effort to explain some event or practice by reference to the machinations of powerful people who have also managed to conceal their role, and acknowledged that some conspiracy theories have turned out to be true. It also specifically notes that his plan of, quote, cognitive infiltration should only be used against false conspiracy theories that could be harmful to the government or society. Okay, how exactly do you... Basically, it's just saying we want people to be in there and infiltrate and influence the conversation if it's the kind of conspiracy theory that we don't want out there. That's basically it. Yeah. Even then, the suggestions that the government should infiltrate groups that are not actively participating in criminal acts is troubling. In fact, it recalls the abuses uncovered by the Church Committee in the 1970s when the FBI infiltrated such subversive groups as the feminists and civil rights movements. To his credit, Sunstein's infiltration suggestion is different in nature. By this, we do not mean 1960s-style infiltration. This is a quote from this thing. By this, we do not mean 1960s-style infiltration with a view to surveillance and collecting information, possibly for use in future prosecutions. Rather, we mean that the government efforts might succeed in weakening or even breaking up the ideological and epistemological complexes that constitute these networks and groups. I'm starting to get a bit epistemological at this guy now. But while it's nice to assume that the government would limit that cognitive infiltration authority to false conspiracies, history suggests that it would also be used against activists trying to expose actual government misconduct. That's the only thing that they would be used for. The only thing... Look, there is no evidence in all of history. I could say this quite... Notably, everybody who says, oh, there's no evidence for that, there's no evidence for that, is usually lying. But I can say this quite clearly. There is no evidence that when the government starts infiltrating into activist groups or information cells or whatever it wants, that it's there to help you as a patriotic citizen trying to expose corruption in the government. No government ever brings down itself. Is always brought down by the people or through the mixture of its own corruption and scumbaggery that it cannot sustain itself any longer because all of its resources are being stolen and all of the people working for them are corrupt and can't do their frickin' job, okay? It's the only thing that ever happens. And incidentally, the only time when they actually start to infiltrate groups and so on and so forth that are not parroting and puppeting their party lines is to try and destroy them. And to stop them from exposing their riotous scumbaggery. I don't know. You just basically got to assume the worst with these people. You really do. If you don't assume the worst, I can assume that basically you're going to be taken for a ride. All right? It's pretty straightforward, isn't it? The paper also suggests that the government, quote, formally hire credible private parties to engage in counter speech. That's counter spin, more like, to kind of spin whatever they... I mean, this is what we're talking about with Mr. Ken and the fluoride thing, isn't it? That sounds like an awful lot like the 50 cent party of online commentators who are paid per comment by the Chinese Communist Party to sway public opinion. I didn't know that. 50 cents a comment? Mate. You'd actually, you know, you could make a decent living off that. Can you imagine how many hours you could spend just trolling other people's sites? Just slapping on a bit of BS. It'd be nice. A man with such a credulous view of government power might not be the best choice to review allegations of NSA privacy abuses. You know? Am I the only one that is, like, remarkably worried about this kind of thing? Maybe I'm not actually worried. Maybe I don't actually care if there's paid shills and trolls and so on and so forth out there. But then again, maybe I'm not grasping the full concept of what's actually going on here. Let's just think about this for a moment. Let's say it's a major newspaper, say the New Zealand Herald or whatever, publishes a positive story about fluoride or something of that nature. And then all of a sudden, a whole bunch of people come in with their BS propaganda, their one-line mantra dogma that has no scientific evidence quotable of any kind whatsoever, and upon a single question being asked of them to clarify what it is that they're talking about results in either abuse or them not answering because they don't actually have any frickin' evidence. Could that put people off? Could that mind control people away from actually wanting to do anything right with this information? Or will they just say, oh, there's some scientists who say that, and I can show you another scientist that says the other thing because I paid him to say so? Well, that argument doesn't work with things like, say, fluoride, for example. Have a look at all the people that are promoting fluoride. They're getting paid. Have a look at all the people that are against fluoride. They're volunteers. You know, you can't make this stuff up. And that's pretty obvious, isn't it? Somebody who's independent, somebody who's not charging for it, comes out and says something, they got nothing to gain, do they? Especially if they get demonized by a bunch of frickin' propagandistic scum. Right? I mean, I'm almost sick of talking about it, you know, because the answers to are just so obvious. I mean, it's real obvious what's going on here. Okay. And if it's not obvious, let me break it down. Fluoride's a toxic poison. The people who promoted are morons because they drank fluoride, which reduces your IQ. Okay, that's it. And there's just copious quantities of propaganda all over the place. And it's difficult to sift through. And what's interesting is, as I mentioned before, about how they just basically say the direct opposite of whatever you are. They basically accuse you of being them. Oh, Vinny, you're a liar. But you're a liar. Oh, Vinny, you're spouting pseudoscience. But you're spouting pseudoscience. Oh, Vinny, you don't have any evidence. But you don't have any evidence. Oh, Vinny, you're being paid. You're a shill, but you're a paid shill. You see what I'm saying? Every single freaking thing that they say. Oh God! Oh my God! I just want to makes me want to tear my own freaking eyeballs out of the socket with salted spoons. Oh God! Just shut up, all of you. He's just so freaking retarded. I don't even understand how you get out of your freaking bed in the morning without tripping over the shoelaces that you can't freaking tie. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, I'm suddenly embodying, I was about to say embalming, I would have to drink Coke Zero for that. I'm suddenly embodying the very thing that the fluoridationists actually accuse people like me of being. Emotional, going nuts, you know, just flying off the handle and so on and so forth. Look, bro, if somebody's telling lies, blatant freaking lies, then I think that you have a reasonable duty to be upset about it. And just be like, bro, just shush, okay? Put up or shut the frack up. You notice how they got this massive list of doctors saying that fluoride's good for you. And guess how many of them are willing to debate Professor Paul Connett in public? I got hundreds and hundreds of doctors, dentists, scientists, toxicologists, chemistry professionals, and so on and so forth. You got all these people willing to sign up to say that fluoride's good for you, but not one. Not one is willing to engage in an open public debate with Professor Paul Connett. Not one. These are all individuals, allegedly. And not a single soul amongst them, if they have any souls, is willing to actually engage in open public debate. What does that tell you? They're all willing to talk behind the scenes. They're all willing to talk when they have advertisements. They're all willing to talk when they're being paid their paycheck. But you give them one opportunity to put their views out in full view of the public, to have them ripped apart and dissected by Professor Paul Connett, suddenly no one's anywhere to be seen. Okay? Debate frickin' over. If somebody don't want to debate, it means that they don't have any frickin' evidence. Okay? And if they lie and say that, oh, well, it's just because you people are all crazy and we'd never debate people who are crazy. Well, hold on a second. If somebody was crazy, how could they possibly argue their point if you're the one with all the evidence, motherfracker? Oh, yeah, that's right. They couldn't. So, ergo, the reason why you don't want to debate them is because you don't have any friggin' evidence. You got none. You're a bunch of pathetic scum. All of you. You are soulless, heartless, mindless scum. And for all means, we should probably toss you into a unfiltered vat of fluoride, of monofluorohexasilicate, that is partly sulfuric acid, that can eat through glass, that can eat through concrete. We'll give you a pair of budgie smugglers to go swimming in it, and when you melt down, including your frickin' bones, into particulate dust, then we want to deal with you. Because then you will know, as you get eaten away by the fluoride, that it's suddenly not that good for you. Is it? Okay? There's two options. If you're pro-fluoride, okay. Number one, enter into a logical debate with Dr. Paul Connett or shut the frack up. Number two, jump in a giant vat of unfettered fluoride and melt yourself away or shut the frack up. Okay? I can't stress it. Maybe I'm being cynical. Maybe I'm just kind of going over the top. I don't think so. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks.
I got some so-called friends, smile right to my face, all when my back is turned.
Welcome back.
They like to bury me
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Also, Rush FM in Hamilton, soon to be Tauranga, Auckland, and Raglan, I believe. And Ifinity FM, which is down in the South Island predominantly, I think around Invercargill, Dunedin, Christchurch, and Queenstown. You can check out ifinityfm.com, rushfm.co.nz. They're not affiliated, but they both play my show, which is very nice, because now I've got enough stations playing my show to cover, you know, a big chunk of the North and South Islands of New Zealand, which is great. You know, it's really quite wonderful. And I love those guys for doing that. Speaking of which, karma. A lot of people believe in karma, right? Oh, if I do something good will happen to me. If I do something bad will happen to me. BS. Absolutely. 100% lies. Here's why. You ever heard of George H.W. Bush? Yeah, trillionaire, former head of the CIA, drug runner, gun runner, former president of the USA, you know, who's currently still living in lavish lifestyle, even though he's a mass murderer. What's karma done to him? Nothing. It doesn't freaking exist, folks. Okay? If you get a family member murdered, okay, you do nothing about it, that person's probably going to go on and just kill somebody else. But karma ain't going to interfere. I mean, I don't need to belittle people's beliefs here. This is my belief, because I see huge quantities of evil, horrific scumbaggery all over the place. Never being arrested, never being challenged, never having a single bad thing happen to them as long as they live, and they live rich, full lives, and then they pass on peacefully in their sleep. It's actually the direct opposite. Karma's the direct opposite. If you do something evil, you get rewarded for it. If you do something good, you get punished for it. That's the lesson of history. Okay? It's actually reverse karma. It's the exact freaking opposite. Which leads me to believe that the whole concept of karma that's out there is a some kind of manipulated perception. And people will argue with me and say, but what about when they get reincarnated in their next life? Well, what are you going to do, bro? What if they get reincarnated as a cockroach? How are you going to prove that? Okay? It doesn't freaking exist. It's just belief. There is no facts to back it up. All right? Occasionally good things happen to good people, occasionally bad things happen to bad people. But on the whole, bad things happen to good people because they trust bad people. All right? Because they're good, you know? It happens all the time. This is some post on Facebook here. It says, don't waste your time on revenge. Those who hurt you will eventually face their own karma. Share this if you agree with the fact. It's not a fact. It's a belief. Beliefs are not facts until you've got evidence that is incontrovertible to prove the case. Otherwise, it's an opinion. It's a belief, which means that it has no actual evidence other than anecdote on occasion to fulfill in the point. Whereas Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, David Rockefeller, and Amschel de Rothschild, and all of these other really, really hardcore, evil, trillionaire, freaking New World Order scum who engage in satanic ritual, who kill people by the millions every freaking year because of their proxy wars and their depleted uranium and their freaking vaccine programs and their soft kill bioweapons and their obesity epidemics and so on and so forth. You have to be insane to think that karma's going to freaking bring justice to those people. No, it isn't. You have to be the one to bring justice. Revenge is not a bad thing if it is done for justice. I believe that. I believe that justice is an artificial state created by man. It does not exist in nature. When was the last time a tiger grabbed a frickin' water buffalo and killed it and dragged it off to eat and then accidentally fell off a cliff or had a whole bunch of other water buffalo take him out. It doesn't freaking happen in nature. Justice is an artificial thing. All right? So think about this. Don't waste your time on revenge. Those who hurt you will eventually face their own karma. Okay. Let's talk about Ted Bundy or some other former serial killer. Well, hold on a second. What about the families? Oh, the families wanted revenge, did they? No, they wanted freaking justice because they had their children killed by these disgusting, satanic-worshipping filth. And nothing to do with karma, nothing to do with revenge. It's about justice, pure and simple. And here's the thing. What's the slippery slope? If you believe in karma, how much do you believe in it? How much? Okay? How much? Are you willing to bet money on it? No? I don't think so. How much are you willing to bet that if I do something really horrible right now, something bad's actually going to happen to me? Well, apparently, there's an extra spiritual aspect to this, which means that if you are... And Sarah was explaining to me this the other day. If you are doing black magic and so on and so forth, as the elite practice in from time to time, one might say constantly, then you have to cast circles of protection around yourself in order to prevent the negative karma, and then it bounces off you and it shoots against somebody else. Okay, so even if that was the case, that they perform these dark rituals and then protect themselves with other spells and so on and so forth to prevent themselves from getting karma, doesn't that void the whole concept of karma in and of itself? That there's an out? Don't you think? How could karma possibly exist if you can just turn it off by casting some kind of a spell? This is what some people believe. They believe in karma, but they also believe that you don't actually have to abide by it. How can you... Doesn't that seem like a bit of a conflict of belief there? Does it seem like it makes sense to you? It doesn't make sense to me. You know why? Because it's not freaking true. Here's what you do if you believe in karma. Okay, somebody just stole 10 grand worth of stuff out of my flat. Oh, well, something bad will happen to them someday. I'll just work for another 5 years to try and make up that 10 grand that I just lost. Well, aren't you going to call the cops? No, don't worry. Karma will take care of it. I mean... Aren't you going to call the insurance company or whatever? No. I keep paying my insurance company bills, but, you know, they don't need to be worried about this bad karma and so on and so forth. You know, the universe will take care of me. I mean, come on. Seriously, doesn't that sound freaking insane? As opposed to you call the cops, you find out who this motherfucker is, you get your stuff back, you know? That's the artificial state of justice that you've created by your own actions. That's not revenge. That's not anything nefarious going on. That's just the way the world should work. Of individuals who actually give a frack about their own stuff and you and the entirety of society, actually working towards a better goal as opposed to hoping that some mystical force that is based on your belief and opinion will do it all for you. Evil scumbags get taken out by good people. Good people get taken out by evil scumbags. That ain't karma. That's human nature. People confuse the two. People confuse the fact that, hey, look, nobody has a run of good luck forever. Okay? Eventually, of course, bad things happen to absolutely freaking everybody. It's unavoidable. Unless you're a Rockefeller. And I had this thought about, what's it called? A biological undulating algorithm. Biological undulating algorithm. It's kind of like you know how you see radio signals, you know, on those little machines, like the beep beep beep, like on an ECMO machine or a heart monitor or something like that. Okay, there's troughs in the radio signal, and sometimes there's peaks in the radio signal, much like lines of water coming in as waves on the shore of a beach or something like that. You know, you got your good times up on top of the wave, and you got your bad times down in the bottom in the trough in between the other peak, and then you go back up again, and then you go back down again, and then you go back up again, and then you go back down again. You know. That's what I believe life is really governed by, is sort of a waveform functionality that sometimes things are good and sometimes things really frickin' suck. And as surely as good times follow bad, bad times follow good. Nobody should ever expect that they will have it easy or have it fun or have it awesome for too frickin' long. All right? Trust me. Life will suck again if it's currently awesome. And life will become awesome if it currently sucks. Provided you actually believe it enough to want to do something about it and actually take action. This is what my argument is that if you want karma, you can manufacture it. All right? You can make it frickin' happen. Do something good for somebody. And that person will appreciate you and probably do something good to you. There's no fucking karma involved there. It's just two people having a personal relationship based on mutual respect. Okay? This is not something mystical. This is something real. This is something you can have a true and utter effect on. And people deny it because they would rather not take personal responsibility for the amount of power that they have in the universe to create justice, to create goodness, to create a world the way it should be, because they're too afraid of the responsibility of having that power over time and space and justice and good and evil. That's a lot of power and it's a lot of responsibility, and so many people don't want responsibility. That's why they believe in karma. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Don't you go anywhere, folks. Welcome back to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And you can also get all the archives for this show, including commercial-free archives, at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead, make my news. Okay, moving on to a new article now. The best evidence you have ever seen that puppet masters script mainstream news reports. And this is a little media brainwashing video. And what I found very interesting is just how many times you see different media channels on different parts of the world use the exact same words, the exact same phrasing, the exact same talking points. And it doesn't matter which news channel it is. Doesn't matter whether it's Associated Press, Washington Post, New York Times, Fox News, CNN, NBC, TV3 News, TVNZ, BBC, whatever. They all say the exact same thing. Don't you ever find that strange? I mean, sure, they're all reporting the exact same story, but they all report the exact same story in the exact same way. Why is that? How many, television studios, stations, and so on and so forth are there? Yeah, really, really think about this. Just how much variance is there, really, in the actual amount of stations and radio, TV, how many different newspaper outlets, so on and so forth. Just imagine. It'd be thousands. Thousands upon thousands, maybe even millions, right? And apparently, six corporations, only six, own every single one of them. Wow. Now, it suddenly makes a hell of a lot more sense why they're all repeating the same garbage. Makes a hell of a lot more sense, doesn't it? I mean, there's I'm looking at the guy who sent who's at a protest, and it says, go to work, send your kids to school, follow fashion, act normal, walk on the pavement, watch TV, save for your old age, obey the law. Repeat after me. I am free. Well, a cop beats the heck out of you. It's very, very sad. Very, very sad. And you know, this is what happens when people are detached from their ability to think. And I believe that this is why the education system has been structured the way it has, to ensure that we cannot think. After all, a thinking mind is that which is very dangerous to any kind of established order. Don't you think? Maybe that's where the phrase, don't you think, actually comes from. Do you believe it? When you watch the news? Do you actually believe it? Do you believe that there's any truth in the things that they're reporting to you? Or do you just know to the contrary? Because that's the other thing. When people are lying to you, and you know they're lying, but you don't know what the actual truth is, you can't just jut back, but it's actually this, this, that, and the other. Can you? And so you've got no alternative to the lie. And so you kind of have to roll with it and mull it around for a bit. Do a bit of thinking, probably do a bit of research. And that's another thing. You can't solve the world's problems with less information. Right? You really can't do it, because most of the world's problems are unknown to most of the world. That's why they're problems. In general, I saw the Pacific Ocean has turned into a massive floating garbage dump. It's absolutely horrific. Now, think about this. They have areas of the Pacific Ocean that are like kind of astronomical. Okay. It's a huge freaking thing. It like covers up like half a freaking hemisphere of the world. All right. Everybody's garbage. Everybody's plastics, bottle caps, bags, jandals, whatever the heck. All thrown in there. And they've got these massive current systems that kind of work like a spiral, and they all spiral into the middle of the Pacific Ocean, like halfway between Japan and Los Angeles, you know? And it's like two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10 times the size of Texas or whatever. Just a floating garbage island. More massive than anything you could ever conceive of in your life. Nobody's doing anything about it. You know, they got people running out there, running tests. People got ideas of how to clean it up. They're digging up seagulls and stuff like that all along the beaches over the West Coast and elsewhere around the world. And they are just filled. These birds are just filled with garbage. They've been eating it all day, every day. And that they starve to death because there's no more room in their stomach. And what's in there can't pass. It can't get through. And there's no nutritional value in it. They literally, they starve to death even though they're full. You know? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine the kind of pain and suffering that you'd be under if you were full, too full to eat, and yet you're sitting there starving to death, taking weeks or whatever. Starving to death for weeks and not being able to eat anything because you're too full of toxic cancer-causing bottle caps. That's terrifying. And this is a huge, untold reality. You know why? Because most of us don't live in the middle of a freaking Pacific Ocean, do we? That big garbage island is not in our face, is it? And we all contribute to it. Heck, we all chuck out stuff that ain't recyclable. And things go down the stormwater drains, go into the sea, so on and so forth, man. We are literally polluting the planet. There's like 7 billion tons, maybe even 700 billion tons or whatever, of unrecyclable plastic being produced on Earth every year. That is a massive, massive thing to deal with. How exactly are we going to solve that problem if nobody's aware of it? Okay, and this is another argument that people have. Stop talking about the problem, just do something about it. Look, man, if you don't talk about the problem, you need to be aware that there is a freaking problem. If you're talking with other people who are already aware of the problem, and both of them haven't really done anything to stop it, then it doesn't really hurt to talk a little bit more. But maybe get constructive with the conversation. If you both know what's going on, then you can actually start to work schemes of how to do it. And both of you will come up with a great idea together, and one of you won't be bothered to do anything. They won't actually want to change. One of you really will, but they'll be discouraged because they expected the other person to help them. And then they won't do anything either. Stop relying on other people to solve the world's problems. Even people you love, even people you care about, even people you think are your friends. They ain't gonna frickin' help you save the world. That's the unfortunate, very cynical truth that I've come to. Is that if you want to change the world, if you want to make something that doesn't currently exist, if you want to make the world a better place, take personal responsibility for it. I take personal responsibility for ensuring that New Zealand has a 5-day-a-week, 2-hour-a-day radio show that speaks the truth, that gets on activists, whistleblowers, doctors, lawyers, researchers, authors, bloggers, article writers, video makers, music makers, the whole thing, right? I take personal responsibility to make sure that that happens. There's a reason for this. Only one reason. It's not even a very good one. Because there's nobody else in New Zealand doing it. That's basically it. Plenty of people in America doing it. Maybe, I don't know if there's anybody in the UK, maybe. To do something regular, to do something every single day, to be a solid, you know? To actually really be a mainstay, to be there for everybody all the time. Taking personal responsibility is the only thing you can do in those points of situations. People come in and they help every now and again, but at the end of the day, it's my gig, it's on my shoulders, and I must do it. Because of that very simple and not very good reason, because nobody else is. Not from the New Zealand context anyway. And I wonder, what are the other 5 million New Zealanders doing that's so important that they don't want to speak and allow to have speak important ideas on the radio on a daily basis to ensure that the country at least has something to latch on to, something that won't fill their head full of nonsense, somebody that'll actually do some thinking and allow you to be in on that thought so that it'll trigger thoughts of your own so that you might realize all along that you didn't really need anybody to provide you with a savior complex. You provided that for yourself because you came up with a number of excuses of why you can't, why you won't, why it's just too hard. I can't, I won't, it's just too hard. That's what people reply with invariably when you talk about saving the world. When you're talking about just saving the environment, or just saving New Zealand, or just saving their political paradigms, or paradoxes, if they seem to be more along those lines these days. I'm not talking about even just saving a nation. I'm talking about saving the entire world and all the people in it. What a massive job that must be. Then you kind of think to yourself, you know what, saving the whole world's problems is just a bit too big to me. How about I just solve one? You know, how about you go out there today and you think about a problem that's affecting your local area or just your home or just your neighbor? Think about problems every day, not so that you stress out about them, but so that you can concoct schemes to ensure that they're no longer a problem anymore. Concoct away, ladies and gentlemen. You have nothing to lose. Come up with a million harebrained schemes. Implement them all. Guarantee you a couple of them are bound to be winners. Not everything that we think about is junk and rubbish, no matter how much junk and rubbish we consume. They can't take that away from us. There is nobody that can take away your ability to take personal responsibility for the world's problems and solving you. Okay? You have that freaking power. Nobody can take that power away from you except you. Apart from, of course, if somebody actually physically enslaves you and, you know, chucks you in a prison or whatever, like is happening to a couple of friends of mine for speaking out against corruption in the political and judicial systems. That's the time that they really force you to not have an effect for a long period of time. However, as the Nelson Mandela case proves, even if you're locked away on Robben Island drinking bread and drinking water and eating bread and nothing more for 20-plus years, you can still come out and abolish apartheid and allegedly give people freedom. But unfortunately, it just goes back to massive corruption again. But the point still remains. Even if you start something and then get killed or locked away, other people will see what you started, that you took personal responsibility and did it anyway, regardless of the risk, and they will pick up the mantle afterwards. Okay? You can either be an example to other people or an example to yourself. Preferably both. And the question is, what do you got to lose?
Nothing.
Nothing that they aren't going to take from you anyway. We'll be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. com. Anthony Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. 5 days a week for your listening pleasure. And I also wanted to remind people that this is a 100% at this point listener-supported show. If you're capable of supporting this broadcast, where we try and, you know, just kind of provide some levity amongst all of this really, really annoying stuff that's going on all the time, all the time. You know, have you noticed that every time you look, there's some kind of new scumbaggery being reported? And it ain't people just, you know, fear-mongering and trying to tell you the bad news so that you'll go and look at it, although that works. But there really is this much bad stuff going down, stuff that is so horrifically nasty that you just don't want to hear about it. I hope to believe, you know, that I provide a bit of levity and a bit of fun and maybe a bit of a snappy repartee and crappy puns. But at the end of the day, the slogan of the show is, in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go freaking nuts. And I hope that I provide at least a modicum of that humour, or at the very least, not try and take it too seriously. And that's why I recommend people listen in 5 days a week. Because you need that kind of daily injection. You need to be laughing every day. You need to be hugging every day. You need to be being told that you're loved every day. Kind of thing. I love you. I love you all so, so very much. There are remarkable amounts of people who have, contributed to this show, who have shown me immense amounts of love. And I really appreciate it because I'm slightly narcissistic. And which is also the reason why I can't work for anybody else ever again, kind of thing. Like employophobic. I work with people, sure. There's no problem. I work with everybody very, very well. As long as I maintain my autonomy, if I have the right to leave if I want to or say no, I can, and not have any financial burden to suffer as a result. That's why advertisers are a real pain in the ass, because they've always got to, keep getting results for the money that they're giving you. And so you're worried about whether or not they'll be offended by what somebody says on air or whatever. Listeners, on the other hand, when I'm listening to shows anyway, I care not what the host is saying, so long as it's the truth, so long as it entertains me, so long as it's actually worth my frickin' while. I mean, think about this. How many other hundreds of different radio shows could you be listening to right now? More than you could possibly conceive of, right? There's all these different platforms and networks and so on out there. But here you are listening to me. I really get taken aback by that. What is it that I'm giving you that makes you actually want to be here listening to this right now? There must be something. And the only differential that I can really come up with is that I'm really, really having fun when I'm doing this radio show. May talk about some serious stuff sometimes, but on the whole, it's about having a laugh. Really. Because at the end of the day, I don't really see too many other people out there talking about how they're being ruthlessly exterminated and enslaved in a million different ways by a million different scumbags, with a smile on their face. Reality is quite a depressing one, isn't it? Particularly if the things that scare you, the things that anger you, the things that really twist you the wrong way, are the type of news that is injected into your life every day of the week. You got to have some kind of reprieve from that, some kind of psychological therapy, in a way. And I think laughter's a good construct for that. Releases endorphins, makes you feel happier. At the end of 2 hours, most of the guests are like, where the frick did those 2 hours go? Because we enter into a time warp when we're cackling. We have a freaking good time. That's what happens in the time warp.
You know, sure as the Rocky Horror Picture Show was transvestite-ish, this show transcends time-ish. I do believe, absolutely believe, that there are a lot of other radio show hosts, comedians, and even film directors and so on and so forth, that you should also get in touch with, including, from Deadline Live, Jack Blood. We have an article here. U.S. infrastructure boom in Afghanistan, $37 million aviation facility used to store opium. And we've got the pictures of the U.S. soldiers just standing in the opium fields. You know, just amid the poppies, as you do, big grin on your face. Look at all this friggin' area. And it happens all the time. Like, it's the whole thing that's going on over there, man. I mean, dig this. You know, this is a big illustration of what I'm talking about. It's friggin' hilarious. Taliban come into power. At the time that the Taliban came into power, I think Afghanistan was like provided about 70%+ of the world's heroin. After just before the US invasion, when the Taliban had been in power, they provided about 1% of the world's heroin. They completely decimated it. They wiped out all those opium poppy fields and so on and so forth. And then I think like a year after the US occupation began, it was after 9/11, they increased their output of opium by 3,000-fold. Hold on a second. Let me just see if I got the chronology straight here. You send in US troops to catch a guy that didn't exist and was probably already dead from kidney failure in a country that provides 1% of the world's heroin. And then by the time you're in there for a year, even though the people that you're fighting against, the Taliban, wiped out all the heroin production, you increase the heroin production of that particular sector by 3,000-fold in a year. And that was just the very first year. Goodness knows how much there is now. Apparently, it's a $37 million Air Force base that is being used to store opium in gargantuan frickin' hangars, the size of which you would see in a gosh dang Indiana Jones movie. Full of heroin. It's been shipped out everywhere. How do you think they get these ridiculous fortunes? How do you think the big companies can control everything? Because they control the drug trade, bro. That's why drugs are illegal. Illegal stuff is way more expensive than legal stuff. Legal stuff, you've got to pay tax on it. Legal stuff, you actually have to have documents. You know, traceable. Publicly accessible. So on and so forth. So if you wanted to finance a whole bunch of scumbaggery operations around the world, drug cartels are the way to go, ultimately, because you get liquid cash. Real, tangible, frickin' untraceable cash that you can just launder through the US stock market. Did you know if you've got a company on the Wall Street stock market and you want to go into a bank and deposit 10 grand, you don't have to fill out a transaction receipt to find out where that money came from. You know that? If it's under 10 grand, you don't have to do that either. But these guys come in and they dump millions upon millions of dollars in cash on these desks. I guarantee you. It's unbelievable. The amount of drug money that has been laundered through Wall Street. Did you know that something like 9 out of 10 of the last directors of the CIA came directly to the CIA chiefship from Wall Street? Okay? The CIA is the ones running all these drugs. It's been exposed. Got Iran-Contra. They ship the drugs in, guns, whatever you can possibly think of, to fund little operations all the way around the world. including the operation that's going on right down there, as the pretext. You know, think about Afghanistan as a pretext. How many people have tried to conquer Afghanistan? Like, I think there's about like 8 or 9 different cultures, and the Afghanis beat them all back. But now, you can flood the streets with heroin, and the Afghanis don't really want to fight back no more. You know, it's a protracted war. How much is this war? How much is all this war costing? And where the frick are we getting the money to pay for all the... I mean, just think about this. Oh. You pay your alleged taxes, which are allegedly legal, allegedly lawful, etc., to a massive system that comes up with BS reasons to invade places where they don't belong, kill people, and flood the world with drugs and dirty money. Who? Yeah, I think that's about it. Isn't it? That's what your taxes are being spent on. So they can run frickin' heroin. Goodness knows how much damage is being done. But hey, actually, allegedly, heroin doesn't do anything bad to you. The problem with heroin is it's real expensive because it's illegal. Because apparently, it's got some medicinal benefits and so on and so forth. It's been used for a very long time. It's kind of a similar story to marijuana. They're very, very different, though. But it is used in the medical industry, isn't it? What's morphine made out of? You know, it's made out of freaking heroin. There's so many different drugs and concoctions and so on and so forth that use all of this stuff. Oh, it's pharmaceutical grade, right? Where are they getting all of that stuff? Whose tax dollars are buying it? Whose private money is being spent here? You know, who owns these particular chains of medical fiending fiascos? Is it by chance something related to the Rockefeller Foundation, which incidentally owns a big chunk of probably everything in America? Is it by chance a whole group of scumbaggery individuals that have come together to create these enormous military-industrial complex organizations so they can spread their money out on a number of different fronts and basically buy up the entire economy and all productive capacity of war and propaganda and medicine and food and the entire freaking world and every single strategic resource in every corner of the world that matters? Yeah, that's what's going on here, bro. That is exactly what is going on here. For any new listeners, I'm sorry if this might come as a shock to you, but there is very little that goes on in the world that seems really bad that is happening by accident. Very little. Most of it, I would say, is a result of just the machinations. What is a Massey Nation? Is that some kind of a nation that calls itself Massey? You know, we've got a couple of universities and maybe even a suburb up out west is called Massey in this country. Anyway, all of these wars, all of the drug running, all of the laws that you're following, all of the food that you're eating, all of the orders that you're following, all of the teachings you were ever given by mainstream establishment people a part of the agenda, whether they're witting or unwitting. Most likely unwitting. They just get lied to. They believe the lie because it's repeated to them over and over again by an authority figure. If you trust authority and you trust that what they say is true, then they can lie to you day in, day out for your entire life. And you will believe it right up until the day that you see it for yourself, for what it really is. Sorry to burst anybody's bubble, but your life is not what you think it is. There are a number of controls in every single part of your life that control your behavior. Tell you what's acceptable. Tell you that your ideas won't work. tell you that your questioning is not appreciated. Inform you that you need to do certain things in order to fit in with society. I'm 6'4", bro. What the hell can I fit into? Honestly. People ask me why I'm putting myself in front of the camera and the microphone all the time, you know, and exposing myself, and it might be dangerous or whatever. Dude, again, I'm 6'4". What can I hide from? Not a lot. What the hell is the point of hiding for something that already controls everything? They will find you. No matter how long you keep your head down for, they'll find you. And they'll take everything from you. Take your kids. Take your life. They'll erase your very existence from the history books. They can do that. And they have done it to many, many people. So don't sit down and act like everything's going to be okay and lie to yourself. Not while there's $37 million aviation facilities being used to store opium for black ops. You can do something about it. Start doing it. What's your excuse? We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com. George Bush paid back in the 80s to be set up and so that they could take the war to the Russians and sell frickin' Stinger missiles to people in exchange for some geopolitical control of the region and having their own private secret army called Al-Qaeda that they could dispatch anywhere where they wanted to inflict a little bit of pain, terror, and fear in order to blame the opposition for being the ones that caused it, when in actual fact they were just innocent people going about their business, trying to live a happy life, and then getting extremely badly messed around by the agents of the New World Order and various other forms of scumbaggery. Speaking of victims of agents of the New World Order scumbaggery, President Assad, I like these stories because, you know, they don't make me happy. They do make me Assad. Terrorists may attack chemical weapons inspectors and blame Damascus. Syrian armed opposition may be ordered by its foreign sponsors to stage a false flag operation against foreign inspectors when they arrive in the country to monitor destruction of the country's chemical weapons stockpile, says the Syrian president. Bashar Assad voiced his concerns in an interview by China's state television CCTV. Isn't it interesting how China's television is named after a security company? Security camera? Yeah, the People's Republic of China. We broadcast to you via CCTV. The Syrian leader proposed this possible scenario as he was explaining how his government may be accused of trying to dodge its obligations to destroy its chemical arsenal. Where did they buy all these chemicals from? Oh, yeah, they probably bought them from the States. Or Iraq, which bought them from the States. We know that these terrorists are obeying the orders of other countries, and these countries do drive these terrorists to commit acts that could get the Syrian government blamed for hindering this agreement, he explained. Russia brokered an agreement with Syria to dispose of its stockpile of chemical weapons amid US threats to use military force against Syrian army over alleged use of sarin gas, which killed an estimated 1,400 people in August. And it's since come out that it wasn't the Assad regime that launched that chemical attack. It was, in fact, the US-funded rebels. So the US-funded rebels say, I don't know, what's a bad American version of an Arabic accent? I can't do it. I just can't. Basically, they say this. Bro. Look, we've just killed 1,400 people with some of our chemical weapons, and we're going to blame it on you. All right? No, just hear me out. We're going to blame it on you and then say that we'll invade you unless you stop using the chemical weapons which were used on you. Yes. And you have to sit there and say the truth and know that nobody's going to report your side of the story. Oh, my God. What it must be like to be a leader of one of these countries that the New World Order invades. What it must have been like to be Gaddafi. It's like, dude, I want the gold dinar, like actual fracking gold in your possession to be the currency in which we're going to trade oil around the African continent. Suddenly, the US dollar, which you can buy oil in at this point, doesn't seem so good, considering this real, actual, non-fiat, frickin' gold there in order to do it. Well, I guess he must just be an evil dictator. Let's take out this dictator after, of course, we fund Al-Qaeda, and this is admitted in the mainstream news. Al-Qaeda started the rebellion in frickin' Libya. They were wide and round and captured tanks flying Al-Qaeda flags. Okay? Isn't this the people we're supposed to be fighting against? No. They've been on the side of the CIA since the Mujahideen in frickin' Afghanistan in the 80s versus the Russians. All right? And every single time that the US wants a war, but they can't just send in all of their troops officially, they get their proxy warriors to do it for them. Give them the guns, give them the missiles, send them in. This guy's a bad guy, everybody, you know, in the media. And we'll just take him out and fief off with all his resources. You know, that's basically it. Not entirely dissimilar to what's going on with the Saud, is it? Not many people know what Suzanne Posel at OccupyCorporatism.com reported. That the $700 billion plus, natural gas reserves have just been found in Israel. What's a country that's in the way of Israel building a pipeline from perhaps Israel to Europe? Isn't Syria kind of like the only one, considering Turkey's got not too bad relationships with Israel, which is incidentally why there's an article that came out on the Wall Street Journal about Turkey. Here we are. Here's the headline. Turkey's government forms 6,000-member social media team. Volunteers to promote ruling party's perspectives in sphere dominated by protesters. It's right freaking there. All the public's involved. They're becoming active. They know about the tyrannical scumbaggery regime that they're ruled under. And they're beating the pants off them on social media. Because you can't control social media. And now they think, you know, it'd be a better idea rather than trying to control social media to influence it the way we want with fake accounts with a professional team of disinfo agents. 6,000-member social media team to push ruling party propaganda on social media just in Turkey alone. And this is what's actually just come out. This is what's being declared. Imagine what they're already doing and haven't declared. And this goes for every country. Doesn't that scare the living bejesus out of you? That there really is admitted and official thousands upon thousands upon
I'm
thousands.
I'm so freaking out-meetinged.
What's going on here?
I'm over Matt. Okay. Ready? Here we go. Record.
It sounds broadcast, like Pete Santilli.
Broadcast. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? You're now listening to. Here we go. Let's authenticate. This is Monday, September 23rd. Here we go.
What the hell is going on here?
30 seconds. Counting down here.
That's you are really listening weird, man.
To live stream.
Somehow we sensibly hijacking my broadcast.
Yeah. The launch button.
Ah, there we go. That's gone now. Thank goodness for that. That was weird and freaky. Kind of like evil invader. Did anybody else hear that? Like, AFR Bulldog, did you actually hear that too? Or was that just on my end? Because I don't know what the hell was going on there. That really kind of like, I was like, ooh. All of a sudden I heard Pete Santilli talking in my ear, you know, doing his radio show. And I was like, what the heck is playing that? I'm sorry. All right. Whew. Isn't that funny? You just talk about a bunch of government scumbaggery being done to hijack social media in order to push their propaganda. And look what happens. Yeah. Yeah. I love synchronicity like that. It's classic. Okay. It kind of rattled me. Like, really? What the heck was going on here? Now, speaking of which, I have this idea that people need to start donating to the board op at AFR, because he's been handling like the whole network by himself since March. Okay, programming in all of the kind of stuff, making sure all the reruns are going, producing everybody's freaking show. Operating the board the whole freaking time, connecting all of the guests, opening up all the chat rooms and the call lines and all of that kind of stuff. It's a lot of freaking work, especially when we've got like, seven plus hosts on the radio here and doing shows every week and so on and so forth. And he has to produce them all by him fracking self. Please help this man. Okay. Please help this man. There is some real bad times being had by AFR over the last couple of months. And I don't want to go into it, but, you know, there's a reason that the archives haven't been done and so on and so forth. You know, there's just been some real problems at the network, and we've kind of forced to deal with this situation. So if you can donate, go to your PayPal and type in this email address, freecell@yahoo.com. That's cell like C-E-L-E at yahoo.com. freecell@yahoo.com. That's the email address through PayPal. If you can make any donations to our glorious and dutiful, and the entire reason why the entire network hasn't snapped its own spine back on itself, radio show frickin' producer extraordinaire with the extravagance and the magnificence and the so on and so forth. Please donate. freecell@yahoo.com. That's C-E-L-E. That's Adam the board op. So please give him a donation, because he gets nothing for keeping this entire network alive. And it might not stay along. It might not stay alive for like... But like, the boy's got to eat. You got to have groceries, bro. Groceries. It's just some freaking gas to get somewhere, because you got to see people. You got to do stuff. You know, donate to this boy. All right, please. And I'll put that up on the archives as well at divinityeastwoodshow.com. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for listening, and we will see you again sometime. Most definitely.